You are listening to Faithless Brewing, a Magic the Gathering podcast focused on the modern format. Each week, we go deep on designing spicy new decks geared at tournament play. We put our creations to the test in competitive leagues and share our findings on the air. If you would like to support Faithless Brewing, please give us your feedback to help us grow and improve the show. You can find us on Twitter at FaithlessMTG or on the Modern subreddit at r/ModernMagic. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Welcome to Faithless Brewing, Episode 3. I am David Robertson. I'm here with Dan Schriever. You know him as Cave Dan on Magic Online. And I'm here with Damon Alexander. How's it going, guys?
Great. How about you?
Doing well.
Doing very well. So this week, we're going to do a quick recap of these delightful Niv-Mizzet Reborn lists we talked about last week. Blowing up the internet with some 5-0 lists that set many a heart aflutter. And then we are going to get into some new brews around a new Planeswalker from War of the Spark, which is Kiora, the Behemoth Bellower. So just to start us off, Dan, do you want to give us a little recap on some of the Niv-Mizzet lists you played?
Yeah, absolutely. So we theorized like a number of different sketches for Niv-Mizzet on last week's show. And the one that I think has gotten a lot of attention is a spell-based control shell, which is the one that Damon and I, as we talked about last week, ended up taking through a league and 5-0ing with. And something about that list that just sort of, I think, captured the imagination of people. They see a silly five-color bring-to-light deck, and they're like, well, you know, this has got to be stupid, but it's got to be fun. And they're just, I think they're having a blast with it. I've played actually a number of leagues with that deck. And also I tried a couple of the other shells as well. We talked about having a more of a ramp-based shell with mana creatures, Knight of the Reliquary, things like that. And another shell that is more like a sort of Golden Hate Bear's aggressive strategy. So I've tried all three of those at this point. Still learning a lot, still a lot to explore. But it's been going well. I think there's actually something there, this decent concept behind sort of making your deck accommodate Niv-Mizzet.
And Damon, you know, as we were kind of going through another league after the 5-0, and just to sort of spell it out for everyone on the internet who thinks we're just jamming leagues to get a 5-0, I think we 5-0'd our first league with the Bant Evolve list, and we 5-0'd our first league with the Niv-Mizzet list. So beginner's luck, possibly. But you know, we've got some thoughts that the mana base is incomplete and maybe the mana creature suite is variable. Damon, do you have some thoughts on that?
Yeah, so one thing we noticed in one of our other leagues with the deck was that, first off, Field of Ruin is a serious card, and the mana base we presented was basically had basics in Abzan colors. And so after you go through a couple Field of Runes, all of a sudden you can get mana in Abzan colors and nothing else. Which casts a lot of great cards in the deck, but it doesn't cast the greatest card, Niv-Mizzet. and so I think one thing we learned was that you really kind of want to have maybe one of every basic. Dan, I think you actually tried that list. What did you think of it?
I did. I'm much happier. I was much happier once I added one of every basic. But that required like another tweak, which was going to secure a Tribe Elder instead of Birds of Paradise. And that was a change that I was a little bit more skeptical of. I think, David, you had initially suggested trying Sylvan Caryatid instead of the birds, because as you wisely pointed out, the birds are just going to eat whatever removal spell they have, which they tend to do. But if we actually need that mana, then, you know, the Caryatid, you can at least bank that until you cast a Wrath or until they cast a Wrath. So Secure a Tribe, I guess, has a similar concept, right? If you're willing to pay two for your mana acceleration / fixing, you'll get your land. It's going to stay there even if you have to Wrath later. So I would tentatively say that that was a slight upgrade. The deck did become notably slower. You suddenly no longer have one mana plays once you take out the Birds of Paradise. You have all these gold cards that start on two mana, and you have your Safe Right quest or something, which just finds a land on turn one. So as long as you're willing to just take the gambit, just look your opponent in the eye and dare them to kill you before you set up for the first couple turns. I think you can actually do quite well with Secure Tribuilder as your mana accelerator slash fixer of choice, which has the added benefit of giving you this one of each basic, turns out that Field of Ruin is a massive problem, as is Blood Moon, as we predicted.
And I think the other variable, and so the specific lands you decide to play, is it Fetch Shock? Is it some of these, rainbow lands? Is how many basics? That's still up in the air. I don't think we've solved that one. And then the other question is how many non-Niv-Mizzet hits to play and which ones? I think in your original 5-0 list, Dan, you had 3 Inquisition of Kozilek as sort of your interactive card on one. And in later lists, you were playing Path to Exile. Do you kind of have a sense that one is better than the other? Do you want to do like a gentleman's split if we had to put a gun to your head now, or what do you think about that?
Gun to my head, Inquisition. I think that the aggro matchup is not as bad as some people might think at first glance, because you have a good percentage of your deck is just designed to destroy things that are on the board, such as creatures. So in that sense, like the Path to Exile is not as unique or different. Whereas Inquisition, it's always going to get something most of the time if you draw it early. And that could be a very problematic something. So the ceiling for Inquisition is, I think, higher in terms of like relative to the deck's needs. Whereas Path, you get like a slightly stronger version of something that you already have plenty of.
The only thing about Path that seems important is we took it through a league, and I also watched this happen to Caleb, and one thing that happens is every so often the deck hardens scales, just kills you on turn 2 or turn 3. It usually involves some combination of the key card hardened scales plus a Ravager plus a Walking Ballista.
I saw that.
Maybe an Inkpot Nexus. And really, Inquisition of Kozilek might stop it if it's at the right point, but Path is really the only card in maybe all of Modern that keeps you alive through this. I mean, to be fair, most decks are going to lose to this sort of opener, like the dream Christmas land for that deck, but still, that makes me think that Path is good as a worst case scenario there.
Just to clarify, you're talking about, you were watching Caleb Durward was streaming this the other day, right?
Yeah.
And there were actually quite a few, beyond just our iterations, there were quite a few streamers that picked up the list. Is that right, Damon?
Yeah, I saw Jim Davis took it through a league. I saw, Caleb took it through a league, and it looked like he had enough fun to iterate on the deck a little bit. Adam Yurchik had an article where he discussed a bunch of decks in Modern, and he had an interesting point that he compared it to kind of like a Jund deck. With Niv-Mizzet Reborn, quote, acting as a really big, slow Bloodbraid elf that rains down value, end quote. And I think that's a pretty appropriate. And Caleb actually took it to the next level and played, well, if you're going to play a Jund deck, why not just play Bloodbraid elf?
I saw that. That was very funny.
Yeah. And so I'm glad, first off, that people are out there having fun with this deck. I think it's a great shell to just really play some good magic with. Bloodbraid elf, I'm still not sure if that's the way to go, but there's a lot of different routes for this.
So you're shaking your head there, Dave.
And I will say I took it through a league and I played a different shell. We'll get that one. I think that one's posted on the podcast website, but it had 4 birds, 4 Lotus Cobra, 4 Knight of the Reliquary, and then it had a full Fetch Shock mana base. I didn't play Pillar Pair Runes, and I did not. I think I only had like one of the other Rainbow Land that does the damage to you. I don't know what it's called. It's not City of Brass, whatever the young kids call it.
Mana Confluence.
And that list felt really good to me, honestly. I played all Tier 1 decks in my league. I played Humans twice. I played the Green Affinity list you're talking about, Damon. I played White-Blue Control, and I played Amulet. And the games we won were not close, and the games that I lost were just could have gone either way. And if we had slightly different cards on our sideboard, I think we would have easily won. So,
did you have a Cavern of Souls in your mana base?
No.
As a knight target?
No. But that once you put Knight of Reliquary in the list, then, again, I don't think I built that mana base very well. but smarter people than me could iterate on that mana base and really improve it. And the number of times I cast Nimizzet on turn three or four was really high. And because you are presenting a much more sort of aggressive game plan, the matchups where your cards aren't as good, like against blue-white, where I think we're getting destroyed with the spell-based version, they were really struggling because we had Knight down early, and so they have to start pathing that, and that's ramping us to our Niv-Mizzet, which is giving us two or three cards, et cetera, et cetera. So I think there's something there as well, in addition to the spell-based version, which has had a lot of success.
Yeah, the Knight of the Reliquary ramp version, I tried that as well just for one league. I didn't have as much luck. I think I went 2-3. But some of that was like matchups that just happened to be attacking either my actual lands or my mana creatures or both. And in conjunction with, you know, the occasional mulligan, you do still, you're not quite free of the trap that we were talking about last week, where, you know, I was saying that green-white X decks, they're really vulnerable to attrition. Niv solves that, assuming you have five lands in play. But I think one of the trade-offs of playing this ramp version is that I think you're down to, what, 23 lands. Is that right, Dave?
Yeah, 23 lands. You
have your mana creatures plus your knight. So if they are picking off your creatures, like you might not get to five.
Or yes.
If they wrath you before you have five lands, like you're not necessarily going to recover from that until you draw back up to five lands to like then cast your one-sided Wheel of Fortune.
Without having to discard.
One thing we learned also is that... And I think this goes across decks, is that the card Surgical Extraction is not always the best card to be playing against, given that the deck really does kind of hinge on one Niv-Mizzet card in particular. And that's one thing I like about the control version, is that one game we had, we resolved a Niv and it got killed by a double Lightning Bolt against Izzet Phoenix. And then they had Surgical, and then somehow we just had a control shell, and though we were pretty light on win conditions, we had drawn a bunch of cards and were actually able to stabilize and ultimately win. And so some of the ramp shells, I'd be a little bit more concerned with that angle of attack on this deck. I'm concerned about it with the control deck, but it seems survivable.
Yeah, I mean, that is a concern, although, I mean, getting to play four Knight of the Reliquary is nice. I mean, you get to play a creature that is found by Niv-Mizzet that is also a major threat. So if Niv-Mizzet is killed or if you're worried about Wrath, you can just hold the Knight in your hand until Niv is dealt with.
Yeah, I think that the Knight of the Reliquary ramp deck definitely bears more exploration. I wanted to play a bit more with it this weekend. I had a standard tournament that I had to play where, so that took away some of my.
Where you also tried to play Niv-Mizzet.
Where I also tried to play Niv-Mizzet and that mana did not. I managed to go 3-3 despite the fact that I could never cast any of my spells. Like Niv was that good that just casting him a couple of times won all the games. But I digress. So the point I was going to make was that we should keep iterating on the ramp deck, but something you said, Damon, about that match against the Surgical Extraction, that was a game one against Izzet Phoenix, if memory serves. They do have like three Surgicals main or something like that, and I think we ended up winning that game. I don't know. Someone was saying we should concede, but I was like, no, we have the Unmoored Ego still. Like we can draw Unmoored Ego and just win, and that's what happened. We drew it two turns later. Took out their phoenixes. I just wanted to say, like, I feel like very, very confident that one Unmoored Ego like is like rock solid main deck. Like, I thought, like, you know, this is like a concession. Like, because I'm going to be drawing so many cards with Niv, I can afford to have like a kind of a loose one of to tutor for with a Bring to Light. But even drawing it in like its bad matchups, like there's always something handy to do with it. Like I think we drew it against Hardened Scales, and I was like, well, this will take out the Ravagers, which like takes away most of their lines to just kill me off out of nowhere. It's a fine card. Like when you're planning to just like recoup all your card advantage, like just proactively casting a game one Unmoored Ego is useful against. It does something against almost every deck, and in some matchups, it's like your only way to win the actual match, like against any kind of Tron strategy. Like you win game one because you have the Unmoored Ego. If you didn't have that, you would be down a game. If you're playing with a spell-based version, I would say don't cut the Unmoored Ego. That's a good one to have. The Gruul slot is still up for grabs, though. Like we were playing Domri Anarcharbolas, and that one's been a little bit hit and miss. I think, the Blood Braid is an interesting option. Metamorphose is one that we talked about.
I guess the one thing I would say is don't make your list too clunky. I really hated the Primal Command in the list. I thought at the end, I mean, we were playing like four Niv-Mizzet in some of these iterations. Four Niv-Mizzet, four Bringalite, plus two other five drops. And I just felt like we were getting way, way too slow. So I like getting rid of like the negate effects you're playing main deck because the deck has to tap out all the time. But yeah, I actually agree with the Unmoored Ego. I think that's a really good one up to have because Modern is getting so linear. It's worth a slot. And you do, I mean, a lot of the wins from the deck are bringing to lighting for your sideboard card that can straight up win certain matchups. I mean, that's a big appeal to me. And I think that's what you see a lot of designs that we've had in these various podcasts where we have a tutorable sideboard effect that's really important in Modern. It helps you steal games when your main plan isn't fast enough.
Yeah. And I think one thing we also learned on the five drops that are clunky spots, we learned about the card Time Wipe, which is a Wrath with the same casting cost as Supreme Verdict, but with one more colorless mana. So two white, white, blue, and destroy all creatures, but you get to bounce one creature you control to your hand. And on the surface, this card seems perfect for the Niv-Mizzet deck because you play your Niv, you draw, it draws you into Time Wipe, you Time Wipe, you bounce your Niv, and then you replay Niv, and just so much value. On the other hand, we just died on, you know, where a turn four Wrath would have been really useful at least once. And generally, Niv kind of buys you back into your Time Wipe, or buys you back into a Bring to Light, which buys you another Niv. And so I think on the whole, that card is just a little bit too slow for Modern right now, just as a quick comment on just that one. What, do you guys notice the same thing?
I would say in the ramp list, I would actually consider playing that over the other one. If you wanted to have a sideboard slot for aggro matchups, I think that would be fine in that matchup because you're going to get to five mana so much faster if you even want that slot at all. But that's an open question, I think.
Yeah, so I do agree with that because I noticed, Dave, that you had suggested including a sweeper in the sideboard of the ramp list, and I was like, oh, that's silly. I'm a creature deck. I'm not going to do that. So I tried playing it without it, and I would have won another match if I just had that one of in the sideboard. Time would have been the best card.
The same thing. We played
because
humans.
I had creatures.
Yeah. We played humans twice, and we were able to steal, you know, a couple games, and they turned into races. But if you had a Wrath that bounces your Knight of Reliquary or Niv-Mizzet, which is just so much value, that game is over. So, and they never know to call it, you know, that's because it's not Modern playable, as Damon says. Meddling Mage never says Time Wipe.
they will learn.
They will have to learn the hard way. So, yeah. So to kind of wrap up, I think the deck is awesome. I think the main engine of Niv-Mizzet finding Bring to Light is like just an awesome find. That is a Cave Dan specialty. I love that. I think that drives everything else. All the other cards you choose, like Damon is saying, you got to kind of pick and choose what matchups you can be weak or strong against. Don't get too cute with the five drops. That's the one thing I would say. I know Bring to Light, you can always Bring to Light for five, but Bring to Light can find your three and four drops that are great in these matchups.
Do not play Enter the God Eternals. That was.
It
did not pan out.
We're not going to point any fingers at who recommended it, but it was 100% me, and I feel bad about myself. But yeah, I think you're exactly right, Dan. There's a bunch of iterations left. I'm glad, like Damon is saying, people are picking up this deck and exploring it. I'm hoping the Hive Mind can keep finding ways to improve on it. They keep printing more cards that Niv-Mizzet can find. Yeah, it's just a sweet deck, and there's so many ways you can build it. The mana base is certainly not a solved thing. Your three and four drops, and even your two drops, those are variable. And like we said, there's even variation in your one drops that Niv-Mizzet doesn't find. So I think there's just so much more exploration left to be done in this list. And anyone out there who is interested, I hope people keep pursuing it. And we're gonna try to find some time to do that as well.
Yeah, I just actually want to just add quickly. In case anyone listening has been following sort of people taking that original 5-0 list, which is now like a week old or something like that, pretty much everyone has commented like, oh, the mana base is wrong. We agree. The mana base of that deck is wrong. Do not play the tap lands. Do not play all the Abzan lands. Play more basics. Play more untapped lands. Some of the specific ways to improve the mana base, I think that's probably the number one thing that you can still work on to like massively increase the strength of the deck. Are trying either the Secura Tribe or even possibly Search for Tomorrow as an accelerator, or even Sarkhan Fireblood. Like I was playing him in Standard. He's really, really good if he's not getting killed.
Oh, that's interesting, because he makes two mana of any color, any combination.
Yeah, he's kind of like a super Chromatic Lantern that As long as he's not under pressure, like he's gonna do everything. I think I saw a match where some it must have been Caleb Durward had tried Nahiri the Harbinger in his main deck. Sarkhan already has that text, the filtering text, the discard one, draw one. So he's worth exploring. And the other card thing that I think is worth exploring is just like value bounce lands from Ravnica. I kind of hesitate to say that because
the Karu lands.
They are underplayed in Modern. Tom Ross has always said that, and I believe him. Like, if there's ever a time where we're just trying to get to five lands, and our mana, as long as we're getting our mana, like we're massively favored. I often find myself. Sorry, five mana sources.
Trying to get to five lands in a field of in a world of Field of Rune. I'm not so sure about that one, Dan.
Well, I'm not saying to cut lands for Karus. I'm just saying to like increase your total mana count by playing Karus. Like in the Field of Rune matchups, like you don't need your lands to come into play untapped, right? It's just sort of like increasing the total quantity of mana in your deck. Like I was thinking at one point, like, you know, Sakura Tribe is good, but I kind of want Kodama's Reach or Coalition Relic, like you were saying, Dima. I just like want something that actually produces two mana out of one card. And so Sarkhan does that. Coalition Relic can do that, and the Karus sort of naturally do that on their own as well. So I know that's a little bit out there, but it's something I think is worth pursuing.
And you know, not anybody thought that Nibbit was going to be 5-0-ing a league, so you know, we have to keep an open mind on this kind of stuff.
Two Karus, just like throw two Karus in there, see what happens.
Yeah. All right, so we'll leave the kids out there with some advice to play Karus.
One more quick comment, by the way, in case you haven't made this exceedingly clear, casting Niv-Mizzet Reaper is just a lot of fun.
Yes.
I recommend everybody tries casting at least once, whether that be in draft or any format, but you know, EDH doesn't matter.
I think it's going to even be more, I mean, I've never cast it in paper, but it's so much more fun there. You get to count out your 10, you get to search for, you know, your Izzet card, you get to find your Celestia card. And all the opponent sees is just all this stuff going into your hand. They know, they're like, fuck, man, I got to beat that card, that card, and that card. So I think you'll get a lot of sweet, sweet rage quits in real life. And that's what Magic is really all about.
Treat yourself to the playing.
Treat yourself. Right? You earned it. You were working hard all week. Listen to
your message. The dream is to make your opponent write down all 10 cards you got. And
yeah,
just
exactly.
Shake them down. That's the dream.
Multiple post-it notes. So onto a new card, the new brews for this week. This is another Dan Shriver recommendation to me. So Cave Dan said, "Oh, we should start brewing around these new planeswalkers. People are really interested in the new set." I was like, "Oh yeah, what are you into? Are you into the Narset? You know, there's this cool Conley Woods list that hopefully we get to talk about at some point." But no, Kiora, Behemoth Beckoner. I think this card is sweet and modern. So of course, much like Niv-Mizzet, Dan, this was not on my radar at all. Do you want to go into why you think Kiora?
We might have to read this one first. Cause
oh yeah, this is a reader.
If you're not playing sealed deck or draft, you might not know this card that well.
it's certainly not been put into any standard constructed decks either. So,
so it's three CMC, right? Two plus a green or a blue hybrid. Seven loyalty. This is an uncommon planeswalker from War of the Spark, so that means it has a static and a minus. So the static is whenever a creature with power 4 or greater enters the battlefield under your control, draw a card. So that's the text of the Colossal Majesty, I think, from M19. The minus ability, minus 1 untap target permanent, which is something that Kioras have had over the years, but nobody knows that because no Kiora before has ever seen any play. So this is like in keeping with her brand of untapping stuff. Those are two interesting abilities to sort of glom together. I think when I first looked at this, I was thinking, well, that minus one is pretty good in the sense that it can untap a mana source, right? That's probably like the default mode of it. And because it's a three drop, you know, if I were interested in generating a lot of mana, I would start with a mana creature on turn one. I would then play Kiora on turn two. And like what I like about it is that it's kind of like a three-drop mana creature with haste in that sense. Like you can immediately minus one, get the mana back, either one mana or possibly two mana if you led with a Utopia Sprawl. The minus one can untap any permanent. So like that is possible to like do with creatures. There are not that many creatures that tap, But there are some. Right? You can untap an Either Reliquary. You can untap a Sakura Tribe Skelch, which is kind of interesting if you're trying to play Karus. You can kind of get like
you can untap a Karu for two mana.
Exactly. Well, that's another card you would want to play with Sakura Tribe Skelch, for example. You kind of get like a bootleg amulet deck going with Kira, Behemoth Beckoner. So that's all just the minus ability, right? For three mana, you get like a Junior Varsity Garrick Wildspeaker, who comes, I mean, coming down on three CMC is a huge deal, right? Garrick was already pretty good, but at four mana, like, he's not good enough to, like, he's nothing special. So in addition to all that, we have...
Editor's note, Garrick was not pretty good. Go ahead.
Oh. Daggers. Daggers. You still played in Green Devotion, I think. One or two of. So, really interesting mana creature. And in addition to all that, we get this static ability that draws cards. And, like, you know, that's... You know me. That's all it takes.
Yeah. It's magical text.
That's an effect.
What are your thoughts on this card as a modern staple?
Yeah, well, so the first thing is that it looks kind of like a... My first reactions were, A, it looks like a Wall of Roots, but Wall of Roots defends you, and this needs defending. Second off, every time I build an EDH deck as green, I put the card Garrick's Pack Leader in it, which says whenever a creature with power 3 or greater enters the battlefield under your control, you can draw a card. And I always wind up cutting that card almost immediately. That ability always feels like what's called a win more thing, where if you're casting these big creatures, you should already be winning if they're resolving. That's the whole point of playing big creatures. But that said, Kira wraps it all up into a nice package, and in particular, untap target permanent is definitely better than producing a green mana. Arbor Elf is quite a powerful card with Utopia Sprawl, much less being able to untap Knight of the Reliquary. And so it definitely looks like a promising card to brew around. And I guess a lot of the cards that you want to untap put it into a shell that combining them together on your mana creature, this draw engine, seems potentially quite good.
So I would say to your comparisons, Damon, that Wall of Roots is a great card. I'm happy with that comparison. But the Pack Leader is a waste of five mana, right? Because especially in the context of EDH, right? Like, you're not doing anything with that 4/4. And the Colossal Majesty, which is an enchantment for two and a green that I referenced, which I think is standard legal. You know, I think that is the appropriate mana cost for that effect, right? If you want that line of text of drawing a card off of creatures with power 4 or greater, like, you would expect to pay at least 3 mana for it. So Kira is giving you that on rate, but, like, you're getting all this mana back. So in that sense, like, she's best in class, and I think I'm always attracted to cards like that, that, you know, they give you something and a desirable effect at the cheapest cost it's ever been. I think Kira falls into that category. So, like, I can't immediately think of a deck that would use this, but that's only because there has never been a card that has offered this effect at that attractive of a price.
All right. I mean, I think that's kind of where I landed on it, too. Dan and I, typically when he recommends cards to me, he doesn't explain why. He just tells me I should start brewing around them, and I just listen to him. Just, that's what everyone should be doing out there who's on these podcasts.
Because I know you're going to come up with something sweet. You know?
Well, I spent the Saturday morning eating my oatmeal and thinking about what to do with Kiora Behemoth Beckoner, and I came up with kind of three shells I'm going to kind of run by you guys. The first one is, I thought, all right, let's put it in. The one thing that I really liked about it that Dan was saying is that untap when it comes into play. So it functions as a two-mana planeswalker if you can use that mana. And one-mana spells in Modern are the most popular spells. The Noble Hierarch is the most popular green spell, or Ancient Stirrings. Lightning Bolt is the most popular red spell. Path is the most popular white spell. I don't know what the most popular black spell is. Is it Inquisition or Fatal Push? Or is it the Remove the Graveyard?
Death Shadow or Gurmagi Angler? Yeah. More so, one-mana spells. All one-mana. So
untapping one mana lets you cast really powerful spells in Modern specifically, and in certain cases it lets you cast four power creatures, so it lets you replace itself. So the first shell that I'm going to propose here is, a while ago in the heyday of Jund, there was a deck called Little Kid Green White. It took advantage of the fact that Wiltleaf Liege is very resistant to Liliana's plus ability, and it kind of buffs all of your mana creatures and allows your green-white creatures to be incredibly powerful. And a green-white creature that I think you guys both mentioned was relevant with this card is Knight of the Reliquary. So Knight of the Reliquary is a card that functions as ramp, so it still kind of does what Kiora does on three. It rewards you for playing your one drops. You want to play one drop to play Kiora on two. And it can make use of both of Kiora's abilities. It can come into play as a 4-4, and it untapping Knight of the Reliquary can be very powerful. And then the other thing is you get to play a bunch of one drops. So I have 8 mana creatures. I have Path to Exile, Fatal Push, and Thoughtseize Inquisition. Those are all, you know, I think those are pretty stock in any sort of green-white list or Abzan list. And then on your three drops, you can play Knight of the Reliquary. You can play Knight of Autumn, which is a card that can come into play with 4 power. But it has tons of uses in other matchups if the life gain matters or if the disenchant effect matters. And then every white-green creature in your entire list, if Wiltleaf Liege is in play, triggers Kiora. So you can just start drawing, you know, if you're playing drawing cards, plus the mana that she gives you really lets you start to like cycle through your deck in the late game. And so it kind of fixes what we were talking about before. You're playing all these ramp spells, and then how are you getting these cards back? That's what Kiora is. She's a ramp spell that can kind of replace herself. And then there's kind of another shell. You could use the same kind of shell, but not play black at all. You could just play green-white. And you could start playing, you know, cards like Dromoka's Command. You could play Tolsimir, Friend of Wolves, which is kind of cute if there's a Wiltleaf Liege play in a Kiora. That's a lot of value.
And just to clarify, the black cards that we're talking about here are some amount of disruption, like Push, Inquisition, Thoughtseize, and then maybe Siege Rhino?
Yes.
So like a light splash in that sense to make it Abzan.
Yeah, and you know, I think those Abzan lists that kind of were little kid green white played Lingering Souls. That was their like value card, you know, that could kind of 2-for-1 somebody. But Lingering Souls just does not cut it anymore. Kiora is almost helps you with your plan. It lets you hit 4 mana if you play her, no matter what, and it can let you hit 5 mana. So it can let you play a 4 drop that draws you a card, and then you can untap a land and you get to cast Path. You get to cast Thoughtseize. So you can still play your disruption spell, and you can advance your board on the same turn, and that's very powerful.
Well, I really, really like this list. I think the curve that you're describing is very clever deck construction. Having all these one mana plays, like your curve is 1 into 3+1, right? Like that means that just like right out the gates, you've established a ton of mana in play, like a ton of resources. You've got a mana creature and a Kiora, but like you've done that while also either removing a threat from the board with like a push, or you've Inquisitioned their hand. Like this looks to me like something that I would be interested to see this in action. Wiltleaf Liege is also like devilishly clever. He comes in at natural 4/4, and once he's down, like everything else is a hit. I think that's great. I'm less excited about assuming that we will have the Liege in play. Like if we don't have a Liege in play, then we're playing all these like 2-power creatures with Kiora. Like, I'm not sure I want to play all so many Knight of Autumns or whatever 2-drop, you know, we decide is the least bad. So I was thinking like I would be happier if we could replace those non-4 power creatures in the list with things that are just sort of always gonna trigger Kiora even without the Liege.
Knight of Autumn is a 4 power creature, just to be clear.
But she does not
kind of.
She does not see the Knight of Autumn.
Oh really? So she comes in and then you have to pick the trigger?
She will only trigger if the creature already had 4.
Okay. See, that's why you gotta read the cards, kids. That's a great point. I was thinking, oh, it's a 4-power creature when you want it to be. And it is a 4-power creature, but it's not a 4-power creature that's seen by Kiora. Great point. Yeah,
that also comes up if you're playing Bant Monkey form, so don't get too excited about Knight of Autumn. It's not going to evolve everything the way you want it to.
Fair enough. Good points.
I agree with what Dan is saying. I think the kind of like the 1 CMC ramp into Kiora plus another spell does seem super powerful. And I think the key thing is to try to enable that line of play while also maintaining a deck that's strong, even if Kiora, you know, isn't in your hand or if it doesn't resolve or one of a million things goes wrong. That's where I think playing a lot of Knight of Autumns, I don't think that card is quite good enough to deserve a lot of main deck slots, even if it did work with Kiora. And so the key thing is finding this green-white, this little kid green-white shell that has the right mix of spells. And maybe it's kind of like more, a little bit more towards the rock side of things.
I have the same thought. Yeah. So you're thinking of creatures like Tarmogoyf, maybe Grimflayer? Or
you love the Grimflayer. Every list, every green black who caved in on the call involves Grimflayer.
No,
to be fair, he played with good results.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wish the tracker worked better with Kiora. Unfortunately, the four power is just a little bit too big for our tracker buddy.
Well, we got a bone to pick with Tracker, though. We have a serious bone to pick with Tracker.
And I guess my point is, Kiora is like a tracker that they don't just get to Lightning Bolt. Like, she draws a similar amount of cards, possibly, without having to invest as much mana, and she also functions as a ramp spell. So I think she would take the role of Tracker, and this would be your quote-unquote card advantage engine in your rock deck, as opposed to Tracker. Now, whether that's good or bad, I mean, that's a reasonable argument to be had, but that's kind of how I see her role.
How many hits do we think we need off Kiora, creatures of power 4 or greater, to really make her shine? Can you get by with, 5, or do you need 10 or 20?
I mean, so kind of 20 seems well. I mean, she's still a ramp spell no matter what, so to me that's already worth something. Just a 3-mana ramp spell is reasonable. If it draws another card, that's already pretty good. If they create a 3-mana sorcery that ramped you and drew a card and threatened to ramp you or threatened to draw additional cards throughout the game, that would be very powerful.
My gut says 12 to 15 creatures and then mana sinks to take advantage of the extra mana you'll have, like Dave was describing. And I assume that, Dave, you would be getting that in this list from some kind of value land, like a Gavinny Township or...
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, when you have Knight of Reliquary and Kiora, you can start to get a little cute with your mana base if you like. Obviously, Knight can get bigger and bigger. You can, and I did this in the Niv-Mizzet list, you can attack with Knight and untap it. You can use it first and then attack. I mean, you can give creatures functionally vigilance so they protect Kiora or in a race situation, which I did against humans several times. The Knight of the Reliquary interacting with Kiora is very powerful.
Yeah, I saw that, Matt. That was quite good. So the thing I was going to say about Tireless Tracker was that I feel the same way about Tireless Tracker as David does about Lingering Souls. Like, it's just not as good as... It sees much more play than it deserves to see in Modern. And this is something that Jadine Klemparans at Star City, when she was their columnist there, was always harping on this. But she preferred to play Jund because once you give up the red cards, like, you end up playing all these Tireless Trackers. They're just too slow for Modern. A, because they die, and B, because they just take all your mana. Like, you want the cards off them, and they require so much mana out of you. So I think, like, one of the draws to exploring this shell for me is that, like, you can get that card advantage engine without having to play Tireless Tracker.
Well, it's the other way. It's beyond not having to pay mana to get the cards. You get the card plus an extra mana.
Yes, exactly.
So one question I have is, do we think that mana base, like, what if we go really big on the untap angle? So basically, let's start with 4 Arbor Elf, 4 Kiora, 4 Utopia Sprawl, and then, like, is Wild Growth even legal in Modern? I haven't even thought about that, to be honest.
It is not legal.
It is not legal.
No. That would have certainly built a deck.
Yeah, okay.
No other one-man enchantment stands alone.
So I'm glad you brought that up. So I have another, if you look at our next list that I'm kind of proposing, this is like a turbo ramp kind of version. It's playing 4 Bird, 4 Arbor Elf, 4 Utopia Sprawl, and then 4 Kiora. And then I just really maximize all the cheap 4 power creatures. Because there aren't that many 2 drops that have 4 power, I do have Frostwalker in this proposed list, although I'm willing to admit that card is just too bad. I have Greenwheel Liberator, so for people who don't know, and why would you? That is 1 and a green for a 2/1, but it comes into play if you have... if you have Revolt, it comes into play with 2+1/+1 counter. So it's a two mana creature that is actually seen. I did confirm this one by Kiora. Mm-hmm. And at 3, I have Savage Knuckleblade. That is a 3-mana 4-power creature. I am playing the Red Titan at the top because this deck can generate an absurd amount of mana. Arbor Elf plus a Utopia Sprawl land plus Kiora casts Inferno Titan all by itself. I have kind of just as a card worth considering a Rampaging Baylos because each land draws a card with Kiora. And of course, then you'd get to draw more lands. And then I have a card that I think is actually really powerful with Kiora, and I'm not sure what the right list is, and it'll also be in the next list that I propose, which is Vexing Devil, which sort of gives you a way to play Kiora on two, hopefully, because we have our 12 one-mana ramp spells. And the one mana, if you don't want to interact with Lightning Bolt, you can always play Vexing Devil. Now, I think it was Paulo who said Vexing Devil is like the world's worst... what's the one red mana sorcery that does 3 damage?
Lava Spike.
Yeah, it's the world's worst Lava Spike, because when you want to do 3 damage, it will never do 4. And when they let you do 4, that's because the damage doesn't matter. But if a bad Lava Spike cantrip, that card would be absolutely insane. And so if you can start getting cards right away, like on turn 1 from Kiora, I think that's really powerful. I'm not sure. I also have a couple other like variants proposed, straight red-green, just to get rid of how terrible like Frostwalker is. There aren't a lot of good 2-drops that are always triggered by Kiora. Even if you play Tarmogoyf in these lists, because you're playing so much ramp, you don't have a lot of ways to put sorceries in the graveyard. And then I have more of a mid-range Planeswalker list that Dan was talking about. Sarkhan the Master list is actually really interesting with Kiora. You can play it on turn 3 a reasonable number of times, and when you do, you can play it, make a dragon, draw a card, and then the next turn it turns itself plus Kiora into a dragon, so you're attacking for 12.
People may not be as familiar with this card, but this is the new Sarkhan.
Yeah. Right? The new Sarkhan is 2 red for a planeswalker with 4 loyalty.
3 red for 5 loyalty.
5 loyalty.
And then for -3, you create a 4/4 red dragon creature, which is already a pretty good rate. You know, 5 mana for a 4/4 dragon is a kind of like a, not a glory bringer, but in the same template, I guess. Although I just said it's not glory bringer, so that is unfortunate. However, it upticks and it makes each planeswalker you control a 4/4 red dragon creature and gains flying. And if you're curious, this makes them no longer planeswalkers, but they can still do planeswalker abilities. And that's kind of a mind bender right there.
So once Kiora's a dragon, she can, for instance, untap herself after she attacks, if you wanted, for whatever reason. She can untap a mana. She can generate mana. She can still draw a card if you play another 4-power creature. Those are just shells. But the basic shell is kind of what you were talking about, Damon, is 4 birds, 4 Arbor Elf, 4 Utopia Sprawl. You play Kiora on 2 or reasonable number of times, and then you really try to just like maximize what you can get out of it. I think Green Wheel Liberator and Vexing Devil I would keep in like any of these shells are just so efficient at getting you cards back. And then kind of what you want to do beyond that is, do you want to play the blue to have more 2-drops that have 4 power? Do you want to make your mana base a little more stable? Or do you want to kind of play this mid-range Planeswalker thing? I think those are all open questions, but I think that shell is also very interesting in terms of just turbocharging what you can get out of Kiora. Thoughts on that, gentlemen?
I'd like to push back a little bit on Vexing Devil. I think that it's true that conditional on Kiora being in play, it is pretty good. If you ever play 4 in a row of Kiora, I would just laugh my face off. That'd be hilarious. But somehow, the problem is that if you don't draw your Kiora, you're playing a deck with a bunch of Vexing Devils. And same story with Green Wheel Liberator. Green Wheel Liberator has the issue that if you can't trigger Revolt, which isn't always the world's easiest thing to do, that card is just not great. So my concern is like kind of the power floor of the deck being a little bit too low for my taste.
So yeah, I wouldn't want to pursue the Frostwalker Vexing Devil version too much. But I think for me, the reason is because when I look at this mana base, right, Arbor Elf, Utopia Sprawl, and Birds of Paradise, like my mind goes two places. Like the decks that play that mana base right now are Ponza, right, the red green land destruction deck, and the like, Green Devotion. Like, both of those are kind of they're a little bit off meta, tier 2, tier 3. But the way that those decks are built is that they are planning to like only keep hands that start with mana, generate a bunch of ramp, and then they have like big mana sinks, which the slots that would normally be given to big mana sinks we're using to play cheaper creatures here. I think that we would just probably just end up floating out if we use those slots on cheap spells like we have in this shell here. But if you think of like, you know, the Ponza deck plays like a large number of Inferno Titans and, you know, Tireless Tracker, as much as I knocked him, he is a mana sink. They play 4 Tireless Trackers. They play, what is it, Pia and Kira Nalar that makes 2 Thopters. Mm-hmm. So like that's a deck where like, yeah, they expect to draw a lot of mana sources, which I think we will if we were playing this mana base. and adding heroes on top of that. And then they just have a lot of things to do with that mana. Where I think this deck, unless we happen to draw Kessick Wolf Run, like we're not going to have that much to do with our mana. So for that reason, the variant that like sort of strikes me here. Well, I like the Savage Knuckleblade that you were talking about. But I don't think I want to play blue. I think I want to explore more of like a bigger top end with either Sark on the Master List. Stormbreath Dragon actually gets kind of interesting because we'll probably have enough to monstrosity him like the next turn.
And Glorybringer is also quite powerful. That's why I also included that with Kiora. You can exert it every turn if it's not killed.
Yeah, and of course Inferno Titan, which we do have some number of that. He's a good mana sink as well. So I think, yeah, what I would do with this shell is probably just get a little bit greedier in terms of like what to cast at the top of the curve. I think you still have enough, even if you were not playing any two drops, you still have enough of the sort of 1/3+1 into a big spell that you have more slots available for like big hitters to close out the game. Can we talk about Rampaging Baelos?
Yes.
I see you have that as a one of here, and that card really intrigues me because so this is a 6 mana card. It's a 6/6 creature, has landfall, create a 4/4 beast, which is you do gather research looking for things that generate 4/4 tokens. This is one of the ones that almost seems playable. You know, this goes back to our sort of kitchen table Temur Ascendancy decks, where Temur Ascendancy also has that draw a card off a 4-power creature. And we learned there that if you have a Rampaging Baelos in play, you can just, start going off every fetch land is 2 4/4s and 2 cards. Which makes me wonder if, like, some kind of landfall ramp type strategy is actually worth exploring in the same basic shell. Like, I referenced Secure Tribe Scout and the Karu lands. You could do that with a Rampaging Baelos. The Karu lands give you a sort of source of landfall as long as you need it. And like you were saying, that is a 2-mana land that Kiora can untap. If there was a shell that could make Rampaging Baelos a little bit more playable, I think it might be something like this.
Yeah, so as a quick response, my first thing I think of when I think of Rampaging Baelos is two things I learned in Cube. One is that if you have the choice between Avenger of Zendikar and Rampaging Baelos, you should pick Avenger of Zendikar. Purple card. Of course, with Kiora, right, it changes the equation a little bit. And the second thing is Rampaging Baelos is kind of a 7-drop. Because if you play it with only 6 mana and they path it, you're going to be pretty sad.
Well, but you drew a card. You drew a card off Kiora. You weren't.
Oh, okay,
sad.
Yeah. If you tap out for 6 mana with like the few payoffs in your deck and they path it and you draw a card, I think that you're still in a bad spot. But certainly the upside there is huge. If you make 4/4s repeatedly, you are way ahead of the game almost certainly.
And in fact, in some ways, Kiora prevents it from getting all the value because there is a trigger when it comes into play. So before you used to hold priority, you'd always get to play the land and trigger it. If you have Kiora in play, they have a chance to path it before you actually get to play your land. So that's worth noting to all the kids out there.
That's true.
All right. So I think, that's good feedback on some of the weaknesses and strengths of that list. We're just going to quick move on to our third kind of proposed list here. This is sort of a zooier type of list that's trying to take advantage of the fact that Vexing Devil, Kiora, and then we're going to play Ranger of Eos to draw all of our Vexing Devils. And then we're also going to play Proclamation of Rebirth to get Vexing Devil back. I think this is kind of like a fringe strategy. This is a little more on the casual end, I think we'd have to say. You still keep all your one drops. So again, this has a ton of one drops. It has Birds, Pelt Collector, Wild Nakato, Lightning Bolt, Vexing Devil. So you kind of have, except for the Birds, like a zoo type of base. 4 Tarmogoy, 4 Kiora, 4 Knight of the Reliquary. You said that was great. 3 Ranger of Eos. So Kiora into Ranger is kind of a nice curve. You can play Kiora. Next turn you have 5 mana. So lets you play a Ranger and a Vexing Devil if you want to fetch it up. And it kind of sets up a chain where you are feeling your hand with cards. And you still kind of have outs to have your like normal like zoo drops where you get your Pelt Collector into, you know, Vexing Devil. That's a reasonable draw. You get to attack with a Wild Nacatl on turn one and do 4 damage to them, sort of thing. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, this is really intriguing.
Yeah, the list looks pretty out there. I mean, Zoo has classically been just not at Modern's forefront for a while now. And an interesting like Kiora plus Ranger of Eos plus Vexing Devil shell to make it have a little bit more mid-game oomph is really interesting. Proclamation of Rebirth seems weird to me. I mean, I suppose that literally if you play 2 and a white to return 3 Vexing Devils to play, draw 3 cards. That actually seems pretty strong, but that just seems such a magical Christmas land scenario. So I'd be curious to try that to see how often that's live, but yeah.
Okay, so this core of like your one mana plays being Vexing Devil, Pelt Collector, Wild Nacatl, Lightning Bolt, that deck has been tinkered with. I think when Pelt Collector was spoiled, people were like, well, maybe we can finally make Vexing Devil a thing. So
let's just be very clear. We're not people who, we understand that these Punisher cards are much weaker than they appear. So I just don't want people to think that Vexing Devil is this broken card that we're using. So, but go ahead.
No. Yeah, I think people were drawn to it because they were like, well, maybe if I can at least get Evolve triggers out of Pelt Collector or Experiment One, you know, now I can play Vexing Devil.
And Pelt Collector sees it if it dies too, which is relevant.
Yeah, and that didn't really work out. But like, okay, now we have Kiora, which at least gets us a card out of Vexing Devil, which is much more interesting, getting a card out of Vexing Devil. So you have the same basic core, but then instead of playing things like Goblin Guide and Experiment One to round out the beatdown plan, we're playing this Birds of Paradise and going higher on the curve, which is what Kiora wants anyway, right? Kiora wants you to have mana sinks in the deck. And I think that Ranger of Eos is like a super clever way to sort of do that. Ranger fetching, you know, 2 Vexing Devils or whatever you need. I think that, so naturally, like, that still has attacking stats and it can potentially just completely reload you. I think that's a very interesting deck to explore. The one card that I would want to add here is Domri, Anarch of Bolas.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Where you had mentioned as an alternative for your previous build, but I think I need to say a word on Domri because he's 2 copies of Domri actually snuck into that 5-color Niv list that we followed with, and people, I think, have been puzzled by that. He's just a really, really good card. What drew me to him for that deck was just like the same as Kiora. He's a 3-mana ramp spell that gives you a mana back immediately. So he and Kiora kind of share that. They're like hasty 3-drop mana producers that also have other relevant text. In his case, the text that like all 3 of his, all 4 if you count the no counter ability, all of his lines of text.
I definitely count the no counter ability.
All of his lines of text are super interesting. And with Kiora specifically, the +1/+0 to your creatures becomes very interesting with cards like Wild Nacatl and Ranger of Eos. So she will see that. You know, if Domri is in play, you know, your 3/2s will enter as 4 power.
And you could you could replace this Knight of Autumn. You know, I included it again because I thought it was kind of a free add because it has 4 power whenever you want. But if it doesn't, yeah, I agree with Damon. I don't think that's kind of main deckable in this type of deck. So certainly there's a wide open slot right there that, you know, that has to be replaced by something else no matter what.
Yeah, Domri's interesting. I mean, somehow Domri seems like he kind of, there's the card Rhythm of the Wild, which was popular for when it came out. Domri does something similarly powerful. The fact that it pushes your Wild Nacatl up into Kiora trigger range is just kind of interesting.
He pushes your Bloodbraid Elf up into Kiora trigger range, which is a card that I know, Dave, you don't like that card. But
if we're going to play Ranger of Eos, I don't know that we need another 4-drop that gives us card advantage in this shell. Maybe there's a different shell. I mean,
maybe the previous shell, the one that did not have the,
yeah,
if we were moving away from the Vexing Devil, right. And cheap,
now I do want to say, like, the previous shell was kind of modeled after Caleb Durward 5-0'd a league with a 4 Rhythm of the Wild, I think a similar kind of mana ramp structure, +4 Lotus Cobra, and then he played like 4 of the Inferno Titan, and then the 5 red-green hybrid mana, the 6/6 trample that if it does 6 damage to a player, it destroys a land that they control. So that list or that kind of structure where you have that type of mana is reasonable. We're sort of replacing Rhythm of the Wild in that list with Cure to give us a little bit more staying power. But I think those that kind of sort of hyper ramp red green beats is fringe playable all the time. And I think Cure is very underexplored as a way to sort of, you know, kind of grind some card advantage while you're ramping up to these big threats.
Were you talking about Deus of Calamity?
Yes. That's... Yes, played four of them in a 5-0 list with Rhythm of the Wild.
I must have missed that one.
Everybody's watching Caleb Durward's stream, man. The guy's on that next level.
Oh, so I think
yeah, it was kind of just like yeah.
Like bigger picture, like when we're sort of trying to fill out a Kiora sketch, we want to the curve to go 1 into 3+1, and then the next spot on the curve could either be a 5-drop or a 6-drop, depending on whether we're confident that we're gonna have 6 mana on turn 3. And if it's a 5-drop, then yeah, I'm interested in Deus. I'm interested in Storm Breath. I'm interested in Sarkhan.
I'm a lot less interested in Deus in this list without the haste granting ability of Rhythm of the Wild. I think that's one of the reasons why he was drawn to it.
But you get it a full turn sooner and you get the card off it right away.
But so you don't always have QR in play, and the mana doesn't actually matter all that much sometimes. I think I'd rather have a haste creature if it was up to me. I think the 4/4 dragon that you can, like you say, use the mana to turn into a super dragon is a little bit more attractive.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but I think just the head-to-head comparison between Kiora and Rhythm of the Wild, if we're thinking of like how we want to distribute slots in a deck like that, like Rhythm of the Wild, you take a full turn off.
Right? Yes.
It doesn't do anything for you except give haste to your next play, make it uncounterable. Kiora, like you get a useful effect, and you know it's speeding you towards your next thing, whether that's a 1-mana play immediately or a big ramp spell. Like you're not taking your turn off the ramp curve to do that. You can go Deus on turn 3 with Kiora. Whereas I don't think you can do that with Rhythm of the Wild.
Agreed. Yeah, no, I'm not arguing for Rhythm of the Wild over this card. I'm just saying there's a general structure that has used similar types of sort of principles that Caleb Durward has 5-0'd with, and that's sort of where I picked all my spots on the curve to sort of match that.
Gotcha.
So yeah, those are just actually, three things. Oh, go ahead, Damon. I'm sorry.
Yeah, just one last thing. We mentioned this before, actually. The Glorybringer has a pretty strong synergy with Kiora, and Glorybringer doesn't really get a lot of modern attention, but the card is powerful. And against a lot of creature decks, being able to Glorybring repeatedly every turn is actually probably pretty strong. And randomly, 4 toughness is a critical number right now in Modern with Thing in the Ice.
So, absolutely.
I find that interesting as a payoff card.
I totally glazed over that interaction, so I'm glad you mentioned it right now.
What do you mean? I said it earlier in this podcast.
You said that, and I was just like, oh yeah, Glorybringer is good. Why not play that on 5?
No, yes, I think some combination of it, and that's why you see the list has some combination of that in Stormbringer, and you could have some on the board and some not. So Stormbringer is obviously better against XR playing Path to Exile, Glorybringer is great against Thing in the Ice, very specifically, assuming it hasn't flipped yet, but it's tough to beat a flip Thing in the Ice with these kind of decks anyway, so.
Oh, okay, I'm back on the Glorybringer train now. I've seen the lights.
Yeah, I think all of these lists they all look pretty sweet. I mean, I think that the craziest one is the Vexing Devil Ranger of Eos one, and that one looks just crazy enough that I'd like to try. The fact that the deck deserves the word Zooier, which I've never heard used in the English language before, is already remarkable.
Zooier, Zoo deck.
Then there's like the kind of more rock style deck that just plays a lot of disruption plus perhaps Wiltleaf Liege or Seed Rhino. Those interesting. I mean, I guess I'm not 100% sure that Kiora really helps take the deck to the next level compared to kind of like a straight rock deck, but it looks worth trying. And then the ramp one, I think, needs a little bit more thought before we kind of can proceed with that deck.
Oh, interesting. I think I rank them in almost the opposite order.
Well, I think you might have a build of the team or ramp one more in mind than I do.
Maybe so. Yeah, I think.
Well, now that he knows how Glorybringer works with Kiora, he might be on board.
Well, I was really high on Sark on the Master List, and now I'm not sure how I would divvy up those slots, because I thought that if I were going to have Kiora and the new Domri and my 3 slot, then a Sarkhan is a perfect follow-up to that. You know, people are doing that in Standard right now.
Yes.
And it's great. planeswalkers are under even less pressure in Modern than they are in Standard. So I think, you know, that one or the Glorybringer Stormbreath shell, I think, has a lot of promise. Like, Stormbreath is almost impossible to kill right now. You can't path it, you can't push it, you can't bolt it. And it's a mana sink because of this, the monstrous ability. Glorybringer has that sweet synergy, which I recently learned about in the last few minutes. And I honestly just think that deck should play for Bloodbraid Elf, just to avoid flooding out. So I would want to try that list, and probably be, I would be less inclined to start with the Ranger of Eos deck, although okay, that has a certain appeal to it as well. And that in the middle is this, well, Damon, you're calling it a rock list. I think of it as more of a green-white, it's more a green-white little kid, right? It's not, you know, rock to me is defined by Liliana of the Veil and everything that that card represents, like grinding both players down to the dust and sort of removing all resources until you have just one thing that will close the game. I think the Kiora goes in kind of the opposite direction. She's not trying to stop them from doing anything. She's just trying to accelerate you towards more and more of what, you know, what you fill your deck with, fatties and a little bit of disruption. That deck I think would be quite playable out of the box as Dave has drawn it up. And like the change that, you know, a variant of that would be instead of a light black splash, you know, you could try even a light red splash. The two cards in particular, Gruul Spellbreaker and Lightning Bolts, are just like, you know, proactive cards that, you know, if you have extra mana on one turn, you can just fire that off and probably get something out of it. I think that one, I think I feel pretty good about just registering that for a league and just seeing how it does. I guess it's maybe not as interesting as the other two. Dave, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, they all look sweet to me. I have a hard time believing like Kiora is actually that good. I mean, I think we can always like imagine the nut draw kind of with Kiora. Like, we're playing her on turn two, she's not just getting killed by something, and then the next turn it's just like, oh man, you got all this mana. I'd have to actually see how the games play out. So I guess my default would be to play whatever list seems best without Kiora in play. But yeah, I actually liked the teamer list with all the small one drops, which is terrible unless Kiora is in play. So
which list is this? This is
the teamer list. You guys basically said you like maybe the basic shell, but the payoffs weren't there. I like the idea of just like dumping my hand with a bunch of crappy four power creatures and just replacing it. But I think you actually guys made pretty eloquent points about why that's not good. But yeah, I think they're all kind of worthy of exploration. I'd have to actually see the games. I mean, it's so easy in my mind's eye, you know, as I was brewing them up, I could imagine how the games would go or it'd be sweet, but.
Yeah, a key question I have is just, if you have a Kiora in play, how many times do we wind up triggering her? Because if you're not drawing that many cards, it feels like it just won't be that, Kiora won't be good enough. And if you are, then she might be great.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. The untap ability is fine, but no one's paying a 3-mana ramp spell in Modern for a reason. If you're getting 2 mana from the untap, that's one thing. And if you're getting 2 or 3 cards over the course of the game, that is becoming an incredibly powerful card.
So just thinking in terms of like sweet plays that are likely to trigger Kiora the most, I think probably the Ranger of Eos deck, because a Ranger of Eos is capable of doing that.
Right.
If we maybe add a couple Domri, I'll be satisfied with trying that one first.
Yeah, that sounds good. Like I said, I mean, I love replacing the Knight of Autumn with them main deck. At least that's one easy slot. We could replace one of the Tarmogoyfs as well, because I don't think it's a great Tarmogoyf deck.
I agree, yeah. So we've identified a lot of questions that we have about how this will play out. And the questions that I have are like, how does it actually feel? If we're playing a sort of creature-based attacking strategy like this, like how does it feel to, you know, you have 3 mana now on turn 2 or 3 or whatever, like instead of playing my Knight of the Reliquary, I'm going to play my Kiora instead. Like, does that actually work as a strategy? Or is that too much tension between, you know, investing in this sort of engine, card draw / mana engine, versus just getting your beaters in play? Second question is just, yeah, like, how many mana sources are we supposed to have in this deck? Like, are we envisioning that we want to be making use of like turns where we have access to 4 or 5 mana or more? or are we just trying to stay low on the curve and more interested in the card draw ability of QR than anything else?
Well, that's why it's beautiful. We get to find out the hard way.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the more we talk about this card, the more I'm thinking like that we're just scratching the surface. Like, we haven't even really talked about untapping permanents that tap from multiple mana outside of Utopia Sprawl and the Karus. Like, you know, there are some interesting decks. Like, we didn't talk about Nykthos, Shrine to Nyx. Eldrazi Temple is actually, you know, that is a deck that naturally plays a lot of four power creatures. You have Thought Knot, you have Reality Smasher, you have something like Drowner of Hope. If you are playing a Bant Eldrazi, you have Endless One, you want to go that direction. I thought of that, Dave, when you said, like, what is the best deck sort of apart from Kiora? Like, you know, if there were a deck that could just sort of naturally use Kiora, it might be an Eldrazi deck like that. So there's more to do, more to do with this card than even what we've sketched out here.
So, oh, yeah,
a lot of questions.
These are just the ramblings of a guy in his draws on a Saturday morning. I mean, I think there's, you know, I didn't even consider this card until you even emailed me about it. So, you know, again, what I'm hoping to see is that we show some demonstration of basic functionality, and then that kind of inspires the hive mind where they weren't thinking about this card before, kind of like with Niv-Mizzet, and now they're excited about it. They're starting to think about, you know, cards we haven't thought of or interactions that we hadn't considered. So, you know, it's up to us to kind of light the fires under some of these people, and that's what we're trying to do.
We'll start with our mini hive mind of three here and see
if we
come up with something.
All right, we're going to run some of these lists through leagues, and we will report back next week with our findings. We'll see if Kiora is worthy of the attention we have given to her, or, you know, maybe she's, like you say, maybe the tensions are such that she's not quite, you know, as good as we're imagining.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, it's time to get untapping.
Absolutely. And I just want to give a shout out at the end to Jerry Thompson. I know he's a friend of yours from back in the day, Dan. He resigned from the MPL today. I do not know this man personally, but I just have so much respect for someone who puts his ass on the line like that, especially in the world of Magic the Gathering. I think it's just full of these keyboard warriors who you know, when the shit hits the fan, just, you know, they're never there for any sacrifice. This guy, if you want to speak about your personal interactions with him, but I just am so impressed by his ability to make these gestures that are not just symbolic. I mean, this is a lot of money to move away from doing something that he loves. So, yeah, just shout outs to a real one, Jerry T.
Much love for Jerry. Much love. Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, I think that about wraps it up. To everyone out there, keep brewing, keep iterating. If you find sweet tech, you know, share it with Cave Dan. He loves to hear from you. If you need to shit talk him on MTGO, he's got the chat turned off, though. So,
oh, man. That's true. It's nothing right. Personal.
Yeah, exactly. He just likes to play. All right, take care, guys.
All right. See you next time.
See you, guys.
That'll do it for episode 3 of the Faithless Brewing Podcast. All of the decks that we discussed today are posted on our Twitter feed at FaithlessMPG and on the Modern subreddit at r/ModernMagic. We are a brand new podcast and we would love to hear from you. So give us a holler, give us a follow, tell your friends, and we'll see you next week.